It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're here with us on the Ideas Network. We recently received a question from Patricia Meyer from Beaver Dam as part of our Why Wisconsin project. She asked, I am curious about the history of railroads in Wisconsin, especially the early stages of rail transportation in the state. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the history of trains in Wisconsin? What do you find interesting about trains, railroads, their history? Do you go to railroad museums, say? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Daniel Lidke is the curator at the National Railroad Museum in Green Bay. Daniel, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
When do we start to see the first railroads coming to Wisconsin?
Well, we started to see those actually into the 1850s. The year before Wisconsin became a state, the Milwaukee and Waukesha Railroad was chartered in 1847, but they didn't fully complete anything until 1851, and actually in that time they changed their name. It became the Milwaukee and Mississippi Railroad in 1850. And then on February 25th of 1851, we have our first train ride going from Milwaukee to Waukesha, and that was the first passenger train here in the state.
Yeah, when it comes to the early first couple decades of rail, was it more that kind of thing, passengers, or more freight, say agricultural products moving around and out of Wisconsin?
Yeah, it really was a combination of both. What was interesting, the railroad itself, that first one, Milwaukee and Mississippi, they started in February with that first passenger train, and already by April, they were hauling freight too. They had one passenger and one freight train that would run each day. And then right after that, you started having more railroads coming in. So the Chicago, Milwaukee, St. Paul, and Pacific, or what we typically called the Milwaukee Road. They came up and were forming in the 1850s. The Milwaukee and Mississippi really was kind of the precursor to that railroad. The Chicago Northwestern was coming up from Chicago in the 1850s also. And then you had some other Green Bay and Western in the 1870s, Northern Pacific later on. And really, the big thing was to meet the needs of transporting agricultural goods to the east. So a lot of the wheat, getting that moved to the east. And then really with the passenger side of things, that opened up the state really for Yankee settlers to come in. You know, before that, what you're really looking at with the territory and early statehood, you're looking at the waterways for your transportation. So this was a great way to transport yourself, really, if you're coming into the area for entrepreneurial things or just relocating, and also moved in with the immigrants. So it really opened up immigration to the state.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Lou is with us in Ashland. Lou, hi.
Yeah, I'm my transport driver, and some of my passengers have said that the roads that intersect main roads, like, say, 13, the ones that are kind of at an angle that don't intersect and have sharp corners, and, you know, they'll come in kind of at an angle and then continue on the other side at an angle. And they often say that they are old railroad tracks. And I'm just wondering if there's any validity to that.
Oh, interesting. I had never heard that, Daniel. Do you know anything about that?
You know, and some of them may very well be. It's kind of interesting, especially when you're looking at early towns being developed in our area here in Green Bay. You had the French coming in first, then the British, then the Americans. So they all set up their cities differently. So some were making their plot lines, you know, connecting to the rivers, and some were making more of a grid system. So even here, our streets, all of a sudden you might be driving north-south one way and there's a bizarre angle because it was an old path, an old street. A lot of the railroads too, they had to kind of navigate some of those areas by rivers, by other geographic features. So they would try and get, you know, as direct of route as possible, or the easiest route for laying the tracks. So some of those might be. I know, too, when you're looking at some of those rails to trails things, too, along the cities, those were all the old rail lines. So that they follow those, too.
Thanks for the call, Lou, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Daniel Lidke from the National Railroad Museum in Green Bay, talking about Wisconsin's early railroad history, answering a Why Wisconsin question. We got another question from the UW-Madison Science Outreach Department on Twitter. They asked, I don't know if they're trying to stump us here. They asked, how did the railroad built in 1857 from Madison through what is today's UW-Madison campus and on to Prairie du Chien lead to the naming of the Camp Randall Stadium? I wonder if they know the answer and they're not letting on. I don't know. Daniel, do you know anything about that part of the railroad history?
Well, and that's a great question, too. The Camp Randall itself, and I will immediately apologize to most of the callers here, most of the listeners. I am not big into sports, but I am into history. So the Camp Randall itself that I know more of the history of was the Camp Randall that was formed in 1861 to meet the needs of having a place for new recruits to go and get trained for the Civil War. So Camp Randall was actually named after Governor Randall of the state when he when Abraham Lincoln was pushing to get places to get recruits. So the Milwaukee, at that point, it was a Milwaukee and Mississippi Railroad. They did have a line coming into Wisconsin, or into Madison, rather. So that was probably the way they were getting troops, new recruits in and out of there. The stadium then, I apologize, I want to say it was early 1900s, 1917. So they still had that rail line, the Milwaukee Road still had a rail line going through to Madison. And they ran trains going into Madison. They actually had into the 40s and 50s, there was a specific train that was going from Chicago to Madison. The Varsity, and that was bringing a lot of people to the games, especially on the weekends or holiday service to the games. So Camp Randall itself was named after the governor for the Civil War stuff, and then the stadium was named after the Civil War recruitment camp itself.
Excellent. Okay, and we also had a Wisconsin question in the past. You can find it at WPR.org on the role of Camp Randall in the Civil War. So you can find a little more about that. Can you talk some about, especially in the 1800s, you were starting to touch on this, how much trains changed our lives, our daily lives, our personal lives, where we chose to live if we were Wisconsinites in the second half of the 1800s?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, with anything, when the railroads came through, regardless of what state it was, but specifically here in Wisconsin, when you're looking at the early railroads, with the first railroad, you know, got our first ride in 1851, you had about between 20 to 40 miles. And already by 1880, you've jumped from that 20-mile mark to having over 3,000 miles of rail in the state. So all the railroads coming through and investors in the railroads, entrepreneurs, you know, seeing the value of this new source of transportation, you know, and that continued well into the 1920s really was the height of the industry. And then we see a decline, but you're bringing people in not only for work, for, you know, building their new lives, for coming into the state. And then you're kind of getting into this, you know, what we think of more today with using the railroad for more leisure activities. So you've gone for it really being primarily the industry for moving moving goods or moving people, to starting to get it as more of transportation, vacations. Going back to the Camp Randall thing, sports trains, you had sports teams riding on these trains. You had it bringing people up to Green Bay for games, to Madison. So it really changes. Even hunting, there would be hunting excursions on these trains on the weekend going up to Loretta, up in Ashland County, Star Lake, Wisconsin. So you've got specific trains, Fisherman's Special in the Northwoods, Hiawatha, bringing people up to go hunting and fishing. So it really changed not only bringing people into the state, but how we moved around within the state.
In just our last minute or so, Daniel, can you share one of your favorite or most recent exhibits at the Railroad Museum? I've enjoyed visits there, and my kids certainly did a lot too.
Yeah, this is actually perfect because we have an exhibit right now called Rail Ties, and it's focusing on community stories. So it's really looking at people who either worked for the railroad or had families working for the railroad or had experiences. that might be interested in telling us their story, to give oral histories here at the museum, or to, you know, if they want to loan an item and they have a neat story, whether it's a picture or an object, because we really want to preserve that history, both with the oral histories and the objects themselves. But we also want people to realize, you know, trains aren't just those things that you get stuck at by the crossing when you're watching all these freight cars go by. It had a huge impact and continues to have a huge impact on the state. So, yeah, our newest exhibit, Rail Ties, really is trying to get that community engagement and involvement here with the museum, both now and continued.
And briefly, Daniel, if somebody says, yeah, I have a story or an artifact to share, are you still looking for those?
Yeah, absolutely. We started the exhibit at the beginning of the month here, but I'm going to be rotating things out throughout the year. And again, we always want those oral histories too. So any of those items, so they're welcome to contact me here at the museum.
Daniel, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That's Daniel Lidke, curator at the National Railroad Museum based in Green Bay. He joined us to help answer a listener question for the Why Wisconsin Project about the history of trains in the state. We're done riding the rails, but come up, we'll hike and bike on them with a look at rails to trails projects here in the state and beyond. That's next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We just learned about the history of trains in Wisconsin's early years. Staying on track, we're going to answer two more Wisconsin questions related to trains and railroads. Some railroad lines aren't railroads at all anymore, but we can still use them to get around. For some of those abandoned or otherwise removed railroads, they might get turned into a trail system. Typically referred to as a rail trail or rails to trails, these old railroads now offer a place for people to hike or bike. We recently received a couple questions from John Hansen and Phil Kasnowski from Medford and from Madison. They asked, why was the first rail to trail in the nation developed in Wisconsin's Elroy Sparta area? History, people, groups to thank, how can it be expanded? And also about the history of the rails to trails and or other trails in the state. Earlier today, I got some answers to those questions with Eric Oberg, Midwest Regional Director of the Rails to Trails Conservancy. Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Well, Wisconsin, pretty prominent figure in the rail to trail movement. We've got the first one, as I understand it, the Elroy Sparta Trail. How big a deal was this when this first trail in the country, first rail to trail in the country got started?
Yeah, it was huge, right? The rail trail movement really started just a bit south of you guys in the Chicago suburbs. And there was a school teacher, Mary Teelgard Watts, in the 60s that wrote a letter to the editor posing the proposition that the railroad track in her community be turned into a place for people to get out and walk and have a place to go. And that really kickstarted it. Elroy Sparta became the first developed rail trail. You know, it was really just a really good idea that happened to meet a perfect time. But it was a slow burn at the very beginning. It's not like it exploded right off, right off the bat, but humble beginnings and in the Midwest, in Wisconsin, in Illinois.
Now, one of our Wisconsin question askers was curious about why that Elroy Sparta Trail, in fact, was converted into a trail. Was there something about that stretch that made it an attractive first developed trail?
Well, it's interesting, right? I mean, I'll start by saying that this movement started really slowly, you know, Elroy Sparta being the first one. And it took almost 20 years for Rail Trails Conservancy to be founded in 1986. And at that point, there was still only 250 miles of rail trail, which may sound like a lot, but today we have over 25,000 miles of rail trail. So what Elroy Sparta did was essentially prove the concept, right? And it was not the easiest thing. If any of your listeners that have been out there, it's the reason it's so wonderful. The tunnels are just unbelievable. But of course, tunnels and bridges are also big, expensive and complicated pieces of infrastructure. So if you were to think about trying to create the first rail trail, while Elroy Sparta is undoubtedly one of the coolest and most beautiful, and those bridges and tunnels are awesome, they're also really difficult. So it wasn't the easiest, but maybe it was the best, because it gave people that, you know, when you went out, the people that finally got to go out and see what a rail trail was like, if they went to Elroy Sparta, they were blown away, right? It's really cool. So it wasn't the easiest, but in hindsight, maybe it was the best.
Now, if you've ever tried to walk on a railroad track, it is not pleasant. Biking less so, I imagine. What does it take? Can you talk about just the efforts to take a length of track, forget the tunnel and bridge for now, and turn it into a trail?
Well, you know, I'm not going to say it's easy, but I will say these corridors were engineered by, you know, the best and the brightest of their day, right? But these railroads really were the cutting edge of transportation when they were designed and engineered and built. So when you think about what they were built to do, to carry tons and tons of train and car, you know, of railroads and cargo, they make the perfect base for a walking and biking trail. And so, you know, you have a lot of the elements that you would need for a trail already in place, a wonderful substrate, you know, that all of that heavy rock and everything that they needed for a train is perfect for, it's over-engineered for a walking and biking trail. So it's just and maybe the most key thing about it, they also went from somewhere to somewhere, right? The railroads weren't, they weren't building trails because they, or they weren't building rail corridors because it was beautiful country and they just wanted to see neat things from the, you know, from the front of the train. The engineer didn't, they needed to get things from a place to a place. And that's the beauty of rail trails now. They certainly go through beautiful country, obviously, but they also connect people and communities because that's what the railroads did.
One of our Wisconsin listeners mentioned that within months of moving to Wisconsin, he felt like his local rail trail out of Medford encouraged him to explore his new city and go bike riding. Can you talk about the benefits and how this gets people in many communities outside?
Yeah, I love it. And one of my favorite, you know, one of my favorite sentiments about rail trails was something that one of our founders at Rails to Trails Conservancy said, David Burwell. His dream was that rail trails would become America's Main Street. And that bit of nostalgia about what Main Street used to be, where, you know, families and people would be walking down Main Street and saying hi to each other. And it really was the place where community happened, right? And we've kind of driven, designed and suburbanized ourselves out of that Main Street, Main Street community. And trails really have become, trails that go through around communities have become a place where community happens. And so that listener saying he gets on his bike and you know, really enjoys the community he's in, it's because that's where the community is. You're seeing young people, kids, families, old people. You're seeing folks walking, biking, you know, mobility impaired with a wheelchair or otherwise. I mean, every facet of your community is out using that trail. And unlike in your car when you pass people, if you pass people on a trail, it is a personal experience. At the very least, you smile at each other. More often than not, you say hello. Maybe you stop to have a conversation. It's the place where community happens now.
Another listener question. A listener's curious to know if Wisconsin's current rail trails, including Elroy Sparta, could ever be expanded. Do you have your eyes on any trail expansions, especially in Wisconsin, in the works?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the most exciting evolutions of the trail movement and really the evolution in the way that Rails to Trails Conservancy and our partners our work. We have gone from helping communities and states and otherwise develop individual trails, some of them really long, like Elroy Sparta. But because of the success of the movement in the last 50 years, we're now looking at connectivity. How do we connect these long trails to each other? How do we connect trails in more urban areas into networks that really allow people to move through these urban areas and get to get to places they want to go? And one of the great examples of that in Wisconsin is what we call the Route of the Badger. And Route of the Badger is one of our Trail Nation projects, a small suite of projects around the country that we are really trying to help prove this connectivity concept and show people how to do it and work with people on doing it. And Route of the Badger is in southeast Wisconsin. We're talking Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, Waukesha, where there's already 350 miles of amazing multi-use trail. And the goal of this project is to connect everything together into a 700-mile seamless network. And it's, you know, the number of nonprofit and public agency partners that have been working on this with us for years now is astounding. And the progress has been great. And when you look at a map of Wisconsin, there's a lot of metro areas where this connectivity work, you know, is already in progress. but there's also such huge potential for connecting some of the long distance corridors. If you stare at, if you look at a trail map of Wisconsin, a multi-use trail map, it is not at all hard to see that there's a real opportunity to connect the lake, you know, the lakefront in Milwaukee. It's almost all the way connected to Madison now. It's really, really close. And then from Madison, you can see that there's already some long distance trails, including the Elroy Sparta, that would eventually get you up to La Crosse. And you think about a lake to river corridor from Milwaukee to La Crosse that that would cross the entire state of Wisconsin. What an amazing amenity for the people in Wisconsin, but also what an amazing amenity for people all over the world would come and use something like that.
Eric, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Eric Oberg, Midwest Regional Director for Rails to Trails Conservancy. He talked with us about the history of Rail to Trail in Wisconsin and the Elroy Sparta Trail, the first one in the nation. This conversation came from multiple audience questions as part of our Why Wisconsin project. Do you want to know something? Something related to Wisconsin? Submit your question and we might tackle it in a future story. Go to WPR.org/WhySconsin. That's W-H-Y Wisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, when people come to visit Wisconsin, they ask what can't miss things they should do here. There's a lot to choose from, ranging from the obvious and highly accessible to some lesser known places off the beaten path. And even for people who do live here, there's always something more to add to the list of uniquely Wisconsin places to go, sights to see, activities to do, foods to eat. Our next guest rounded up 100 great ideas. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's on your Wisconsin bucket list? What are your top recommendations for visitors? If you've recently crossed something off your list, what was it? And when people come to visit you in your part of the state, what's the gotta-do thing there? Whether it's a sight to see, an experience, a restaurant, you name it, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Danelle Gay is a TV host, travel writer, former chef, and author whose books include Midwest Road Trip Adventures. Her new book is called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. Danelle, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. It's fun to be here.
All right. You've got 100 things. You actually have more than 100 things because some of them, like, you know, this kind of food. Yeah, here's some other restaurants, too. So it's 100 plus. What did it take for something to make the cut as a must-do Wisconsin thing for your book?
It was tough. I got 191 things in there, actually. So you're right. I managed to squeeze a few more gems of Wisconsin in. And I had a huge list to start with. But you kind of had to balance things out from the state, you know, kind of all over geographically. And I wanted to do a mix of some things that were like no-brainers. You have to eat a cream puff at the Wisconsin State Fair to some fun things that are more hinted gems. So it was a tough, delicate, like, balance to create.
Now, before we start visiting, you're doing something special with this book as you go around, and you're doing a lot of readings, and they're fundraisers, in effect. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, actually, a lot of the places that are in the book that are nonprofits, when I go back to that area and I'm doing a book event there, the profits of the book that day are going back to that organization. So even the kickoff party for my book is going to be in Sun Prairie, and that night all the sales will benefit the Sun Prairie Emergency Food Pantry.
Now, I'm hearing a lot of love for Wisconsin. Where does that come from for you?
Well, I'm born and bred here. I'm a diehard cheesehead myself. So.
I will, for all listening, there is a Packers t-shirt involved here, I should point out.
Is there a different team? Really? No. So, yeah, I mean, I was born and bred here. It's just, it's in our blood, you know? And when I was at the Governor's Conference on Tourism last year, I learned that the travel industry in Wisconsin got less federal relief dollars for COVID than any other Midwest state. And that kind of made me look at finishing this book a little differently. And that's when I realized I can use this book to give back to a lot of different areas and communities in Wisconsin that weren't going to see the money to help rebuild their businesses after COVID shut things down for a while.
Talking to Danielle Gay about her new book, 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 to share your must-do, must-experience things around the state of Wisconsin, famous or not, big or small, local, or you can find them all over the place. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. All right, now let's start naming some names. One I love to see there is Dr. Evermore's Forever Tron. This is just for a point of trivia. One of the very first radio interviews I ever did was with Tom Every, a.k.a. Dr. Evermore. Unique character, unique thing. People in the art world really do come to Wisconsin to see and experience this. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Folk art is incredible. And you just really have to experience it in the element that it was created. We talked for a little bit privately about the Kohler Art Center in Sheboygan, and they have 35 samplings of different artists. But yeah, Forevertron, you just have to stand there at that place and kind of absorb it yourself. It's almost overwhelming, but it's so cool. You have to see it in person.
Excellent. Now, food and drink. Now, this is, talk about tough to narrow down. Let's see. You've got some Door County fish boil, and you picked one, and this is another one where you said, or, here's a whole bunch of others. Talk about the fish boil in Door County.
That's like dinner and a show built in. And I picked the one that, you know, I thought had the best show first, because that's the part you sit outside on the patio and you watch the master at work doing the fish boil, and they tell the stories and history of the area. And that's half of the fun. I mean, eating it is great, but it's really the show leading up to it in advance. But that's, again, that's another really cool Wisconsin experience.
That's Door County. What were some of the other great food traditions you wanted to highlight and then went looking for the right restaurant or venue to match them up with?
Well, you have to have a Kringle in Racine, because there's all the Danish people that settled there. Wisconsin, they have something called Booyah. It's a different kind of soup, and that's usually the area you're going to find it. So we had to look for that. You got to have Eat at a Wisconsin Supper Club. Mm-hmm. And the one that I featured, I mean, there's tons of amazing supper clubs, but I featured Cantafio's in Beaver Dam because they're a Gold Star family and they have a really neat story about what they do for veterans.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Well, they're a Gold Star family. They lost their son Ryan almost 20 years ago. And so they do free meals for veterans. And on Memorial Day, they usually do a free feed, a free meal from 4 to 8. And that's when I'll be there this year signing books on Memorial Day. And we're going to donate the profits to the Wounded Warrior Project in Ryan's name. So they're an incredible family.
Other experiences that go along with foods that, I mean, there's the famous Goats on the Roof restaurant.
Oh, definitely.
Talk about that a little bit. Al Johnson's?
Al Johnson's. And that started out kind of as a gag where somebody brought the goats over to him. But I mean, you have to have the Swedish pancakes with the lingonberries there. That's just a given.
And then a $100 burger.
Oh, yeah. Madison's got the $100 burger, if you haven't heard about that one.
It's not the burger, though.
Not the burger, no. At the Jet Room, you can get the $100 burger. But that also then, besides your burger, it gets you a ride around Madison in a plane.
Right. Now, I've been there to the Jet Room, and this is like right next to the airport there.
Mm-hmm.
So you literally, people park their planes and walk in and get breakfast or whatever.
Oh, and they have a beautiful wall of windows where you can watch all the airplanes, you know, landing and taking off, too.
That was a great one for kids. Now, let's get to some, let's go to museums now.
Ooh.
How about that? You've got some great ones. Milwaukee, and I've talked to the directors there, the Black Holocaust Museum.
That was an amazing experience. When we toured that, I took my teenager and their best friend. And that's the first time I've ever heard two teenagers quiet for almost 2 hours.
Wow.
It was an amazing experience. How they put everything together, the journey that you walk through history was just amazing. And the conversations we had in the car afterward were incredible, too. They have this one thing where you're like walking underneath and it's like you're in the hold of a slave ship where you're like looking up and just, I invite you to go there and lay down underneath there and look and try and imagine what it would be like to be there and have that your only view for like 3 months in a transport. It's an incredible museum.
And then for a kind of an opposite experience, I remember with little kids running around and making noise and having a lot, just being super excited, railroad museums here in the state. We've got a few places to experience those.
Lots of great railroad museums. And, you know, from 2 to 102, who doesn't like trains? One of my favorite museums, Racine, the Racine Art Museum, they have their Peeps exhibition coming in. They have people from all over the world who send in their artwork, and they've made it from Peep candies. It's hilarious.
A lot of people would say that's the best use for Peeps.
Well, they float nicely in hot chocolate.
I mean, I know some people like to eat them, yeah. Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Well, anyone in Madison would say take them to Old Brick Gardens.
The Botanical Gardens, sure. And Kay, I understand you've got one more to recommend to us as well?
Yes. Mater's German Restaurant in Milwaukee for wonderful German food.
What's your favorite thing to eat at Mater's in Milwaukee, Kay?
Sauerbraten.
Okay, Sauerbraten. I used to be a big Rouladen fan when I'd go to German restaurants. So the Botanical Gardens, I can't remember if that ended up in the book.
It's hard because we have so many amazing ones in Wisconsin. Right. And like I said, you had to balance out the state. I mean, I could easily do 100 things in just Madison for this book, but I couldn't. Somebody else wrote that. The gardens that I did feature is the Janesville Rotary Gardens, because they have the 1.5 million holiday light display. That's their biggest fundraiser for the year. But I mean, Green Bay, Old Brick Gardens, there's so many amazing, amazing gardens that are, you know, available for us in Wisconsin. And it's funny that you mentioned Mater's, because I just got the contract to write Unique Eats and Eateries of Wisconsin. And that's one of the ones on my list of 84 to connect with. Okay. I agree. Mater's is amazing.
Okay. Thanks so much for sharing that. I appreciate that. And that highlights something else that kind of keeps coming up in your book. All the many ethnic traditions that Wisconsin has to draw from. That we've already talked about a couple of them. What are some more you might want to highlight?
Well, you know, amazing is a really amazing, well, it's an incredible state for the fact that so many different ethnic groups settled here, everyone from the Swedes to the Germans, and then all of the different industries. We had a logging and a fishing and a mining. So it's just, depending on where you go, there's something different and incredible to focus on.
We'll go back to our callers now. Scott is with us on the road on his way to Milwaukee now. Scott, hello.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Good. What did you want to recommend, Scott?
Well, I would recommend going to GaryCon, which is a Dungeons & Dragons convention held in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. It's online. You wouldn't have any trouble finding it, except that it takes up all of the Grand Geneva Resort and Spa. So it's a pretty big convention these days. But it's so much fun because all the great old school gamers show up there.
Scott, thanks a lot. We've talked about Lake Geneva's origin story for Dungeons & Dragons, this game that changed the gaming world. Thanks for sharing that with us, Scott. Donnell, any thoughts on that one?
I was trying to work on a book that we'd had like fairs and celebrations and, you know, things like that that we could put in. So I'm working with that with my Midwest Travel Writer Network group. We're doing a couple of different books together, too. But Lake Geneva is beautiful. And the Grand Geneva, I mean, it's just beautiful there.
Scott, thanks for sharing that. We're talking to travel writer and author Donnell Gay about her new book. It's called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can offer your own recommendation. You could second one that our guest has made so far. If you work in service or tourism, what have things looked like over the last couple of years during the pandemic? Have you made big changes? Are you seeing more people coming back? What is your favorite thing to take an out-of-town visitor to in your neck of the woods? What is something that's still on your list? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with Donnell Gay, Wisconsin-based travel writer and blogger. Her new book is called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. She has 100, actually a lot more than 100, ideas, travel suggestions, places to go. And you could share yours too at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Connie is with us in Portage. Connie, hello.
Hi. I think everybody should visit, at least in the summertime, Mineral Point.
What do you like about Mineral Point, Connie? Where should we stop?
Well, I tell you, there used to be a lot of antique craft shops there now, but the main thing you want to go to is the Village. And for the life of me, I can't think of the name of it right now.
Pendarvis.
And yes. And that was one of the first places. I was born in Darlington. But when I got older, and that was one of the places I went so many times all summer long. So just thought I'd share that.
I love it, Connie. Thanks for sharing that and sharing that memory with us, too. Donnell, Mineral Point area.
Yeah, Pendarvis. And it's nicest because that the Wisconsin Historical Society has changed up how they do the tours. So it's more of kind of like a history, less of the mining community, but more of like the history and the redevelopment and the restoration that they've done. And then you also have to make time to go to the Red Rooster Cafe and get yourself a pasty.
Ooh, I love a good pasty. Mm-hmm. I haven't been there yet. Interesting. Connie, thanks a lot for sharing that. Joy is with us now in West Bend. Joy, hello.
Hi. What was really wonderful for us was to go to the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. They have one or more cranes of every species from the world. The only one that's not endangered is our sandhill cranes, which are coming back really strong. And they do work to save these cranes all over the world, and it's just beautiful to see them.
Joy, thanks so much. That is in the book, I know, didn't I?
It is. There's 15 different kinds of cranes, and it's amazing the work that they're doing there.
And thanks for that call, Joy. This is the kind of thing you're looking for. Like, if you're not from Wisconsin, would you think, oh, yeah, Wisconsin, that's the place with the crane place?
No.
I doubt it. Right?
Right.
What other unexpected things are there like that that you came up with for your book or that you've seen that, like, yeah, oh, you know, if you're from outside of Wisconsin, you wouldn't think we have blank cranes or what, or forever trons or whatever.
There's so many fun things in the book. Like if you're in Washburn County, in Spooner, they have a railroad where you can ride the Mark Twain Zephyr. 10 shovel nose steamers were made in the mid-30s. 2 of them are in our museum. The other ones are lost to time. And this one has been refurbished. And so it's the only place in the world that you can ride one of these shovel nose steamers. And they're doing a fantastic job with the Mark Twain Zephyr. It's beautiful.
Fantastic. Only in Wisconsin. Joy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us next in Madison. Tim, hello.
Hi. I second the International Crane Foundation and the Red Rooster, but Copper Falls State Park, I think, is a state park that everyone should go to.
What? Paint us a picture, Tim. Go ahead and do it. Yeah,
it's in northern Wisconsin. It's just south of Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
It's the beautiful Iron River, I think, runs through that. I believe that's the name of it. Anyway, but there's a beautiful path that goes across the river in a couple different places. You have beautiful vistas and beautiful old growth white pines and cedars there. I think everyone owes it to themselves to see it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for sharing that. I kick myself. I haven't been. I love waterfalls. I've been in Wisconsin a long time. I've been to Ashland. I still haven't been to Copper Falls. Denno, you've got a few different parks of various sorts in the book. Where do you point us toward?
Oh, well, I do have several different parks in the book. I kind of balance them throughout the state. But my group of friends from the Midwest Travel Network, we have a new book coming out end of May, and it is Midwest State Park Adventures.
Uh-huh.
And so every single one of our 49 state parks is going to be represented in that book. So, yes, I've been all over the state parks. I love our state park system. The way that they handle everything is just beautiful.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Donnell Gay is with us. Her newest book is 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. You can keep sharing yours at 800-642-1234. Jim joins us next in Richland Center. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good afternoon. Down in Greene County, there's New Glarus and Monroe. Monroe has cheese days every 2 years. It's a weekend event. They have a 3-hour parade each time. And also in New Glarus, there's 3 events. There's a Heidi Festival during the summer. There's Swiss Independence Celebration is the first weekend, I think, in August. And then their big deal is the Will and Tell Festival over Labor Day weekend. Any of those is worth seeing.
Jim, thanks for the call. New Glarus celebrating Wisconsin's Swiss heritage, Donnell.
The historic cheesemaking center down there, that's in the book. Absolutely fantastic. It's hard when you have a festival, especially every other year, but I love the heritage down there. And of course, Wisconsin cheese, I couldn't be prouder of that. I wear it on my head with 600 different kinds of cheese. And we have the largest amount of master cheesemakers than anywhere else in the world. It's an important area to visit.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jim, at 800-642-1234. So many festivals in the state, Danelle. I know that must have been one of the hardest things to sift and winnow, as we say here in Wisconsin. You've got, I think, some UFOs on the agenda for us, though, when it comes to festival season.
There's three different places in Wisconsin that has a UFO festival, and so I picked the one that's the oldest. But, yes, definitely. When you have a week where you can celebrate UFO sightings, that's just a fun hoot.
And one thing I liked about the book, too, I mean, you've got, you know, one at a time, you're 100. But after that, you've got some a seasonal plan and then travel itineraries. Like, I think there's art travel plan, things like that. Can you give us some inspiration on a plan, you know, a long weekend or a week off with some great things to do in Wisconsin?
Well, and it really depends. I had to try and break that down. So sometimes when you have kids or if you're empty nesters or if you just have like a long weekend. But yeah, breaking up seasonally and then giving you ideas and different things in the area. So like in Milwaukee, I would do a couple of different restaurants, talk about some of the museums like the Milwaukee Art Museum, the America Black Holocaust Museum, Mobcraft Brewery. Oh, man, they are so fun. You have to get one of their pretzels that's like bigger than your head. And the names of the different beers are crowdfunded. So what they come up with, just it cracks me up. But try to do different things like that.
Let's bring another caller on. Mac is with us calling from Milwaukee. Mac, hello.
Hi. I was going to say Minocqua's Winter Park is a great place for people. It's one of the better, it's probably the best place outside of mountain regions to cross-country ski in the United States for now. And climate change is really threatening a lot of places to cross-country ski, but they still have really reliable snow there.
Mac, thanks for the call. I know Minocqua makes an appearance in the book tonight. I don't remember if it was the winter skiing, though.
I don't think it was. I'm trying to remember myself now.
Okay.
Off the top of my head.
Well, but northern Wisconsin, we haven't said too much. Well, what am I talking about? Copper Falls and now the Winter Park. Any other great northern Wisconsin? We talked a lot about
Northern
Wisconsin.
Train I was talking about, Washburn County.
That's
very northwest. They have everything from the Canoe Heritage Museum to, I'm just trying to think of some of the other fun things there. Perlick Distillery, that's a lot of fun. Instead of farm to fork, like a lot of great places in Wisconsin, they're farm to cup. They make incredible vodka and have a fun tasting room with craft cocktails.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last a little over a minute or so, what do you look forward to in spring in Wisconsin?
You know, our seasons are so beautiful. Our state parks, they're different every single mm-hmm. season. So they're fun to get out and see just as, you know, the seasons change. But it's fun to just get back outside again and do a lot of things.
I've gotten better at doing winter state parks, especially with COVID. I got, you know, those chains for the shoes. You don't slip and slide all over the place. Do you get out in any of the winter parks? Is there a favorite?
We tried snowshoeing this year.
Oh,
that was
wow.
fun.
Where'd you go?
Went to a couple of different things. Janesville has a nice area down there. In even Sun Prairie, Wisconsin was doing something fun where it was a snowshoe by candlelight hike. And I've learned that's a lot of work. More so than I thought it was. It was a good workout.
Okay. And speaking of workouts, you mentioned a huge, busy signing schedule. Where are your next couple events?
Oh, my gosh. I'm a little all over. So if they go to travelingcheesehead.com/book-events, they can see my full calendar right now.
Awesome. Danelle, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Danelle Gay is a Wisconsin-based travel writer, blogger, and author. We talked to her today about her new book. It's called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. Well, if you have more suggestions you want to share with the world, want to show off something in your neck of the woods in particular, you can keep doing it. Share your favorites on the Ideas Network Facebook page or send us an email, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. If you like seeing cool stuff in the night sky, like I do, but you don't want to try really hard, same as me, this is our time. The Perseid meteor showers are going on now. They're building up toward their peak. The top activity should be this weekend, especially Sunday night. Bonus, the moon won't be so full, making it easier to see the light show. According to space.com, we should be able to see 100 meteors per hour on those peak nights. The usual rules apply. It's easier to see them if you're in a darker place. And of course, you got to hope for clear skies. Fun facts, the showers are caused by debris from a comet. Many of the meteors are as small as grains of sand, and they hit the Earth's atmosphere at a speed of over 133,000 miles per hour. Enjoy the show. This is Central Time.